Welcome to the Holistic Wealth Podcast. I'm your host, Keisha Blair, wife, mother of three, author of Holistic Wealth, and founder of the Institute on Holistic Wealth. The show will showcase various experts in the key pillars of holistic wealth. Each week, we deliver the best information on how to become holistically wealthy and live your best life. Welcome to the Holistic Wealth Podcast with Keisha Blair. Today, I have a special, special guest with me. It's my big sister, AJ Williams, and she is the founder and CEO of AJ Events. And I'm so happy to have her here because she has done tremendous work with her business and in the industry that she's in. AJ, welcome.
Thank you. So happy to be here with my sis. So excited.
So excited to have you here to share your journey and the story with the audience. And so I just wanted to start off by talking about your recent rebranding because you changed from AJ Williams Events to AJ Events. Can you tell us what prompted that and the story behind that change?
Sure. So I started my company back in 2003 as Creative Events. I wanted to have my name associated with my company, so I named it AJ Williams Events about 10 years ago. And everyone just kept calling it AJ Events, so I just went with it and rebranded at the beginning of 2020 as AJ Events. It was long anyway, and AJ Events just kind of stuck. So it was a way that we started to rebrand with our new website.
Which looks fabulous, by the way. And it showcases kind of the broad spectrum of events and celebrities and influencers. And I just wanted to get right into that because as soon as people see the website, that's the first thing. You're just in awe of how beautiful and gorgeous everything looks. So can you tell us about your journey with your company and how you grew into this? And I know you're intentional about making your events successful. This is all by design. This is not something that just happened. So can you tell us about your journey and some of the people you've worked with?
Sure. So I've been involved with events for 25 years. Before my company, I was working with the Miss Universe system, Miss USA, Miss Teen USA for four New England states. It was New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, and Massachusetts. And I've kind of been in the Copley Square, which is this back bay area, my entire career, and never really left Copley Square. I'm still in Copley Square. And it's just really funny that I started out planning events and working with events more than 25 years ago. And I had a mentor, I think my 6 or 7 years in working for the Miss Universe system. And my mentor suggested that I try something new. So I did. I left the Miss Universe system and I worked in sales for MCI WorldCom. I hated it. But I'm like, oh my gosh, I miss creating and designing events. And I luckily picked up one of the clients, was a restaurant. I started working with Tony Ambrose, who was a celebrity chef at the time. And I was working in their private dining room, selling events literally every single day. About almost every single day, we had an event in the private dining room.
Wow.
And then I always like to do things that are different and out of the norm. So I always found different special events to bring to the event. Like there was a Wang Theater, and I would do like the post parties for their theater events. We worked with Tom Selleck and a lot of the cast parties. We did the after parties, and they basically rented out the entire restaurant, which was Ambrosia and Huntington. And just loved it. So I did that for a few years. Then 9/11 happened, and we were hunkered down for a while in Copley Square. And I had an epiphany and started my company.
Wow.
And so I was doing a lot of social events in the beginning of my career, bar and bat mitzvahs, milestone birthday parties, a lot of weddings. And then I rented my office from ADS Ventures, and they were a political lobbying firm, which was run by Alan Solomont and U.S. Congressman at the time, Chet Atkins. And they really taught me fundraising. And they said, you know, you should plan nonprofit events. And I'm like, Oh, okay. So they taught me fundraising. And I always wanted to give back. My passion is giving back to nonprofits. Mm-hmm. I love nonprofits. That really took my company to the next level.
Yeah.
And I went to MassArt. So I basically incorporated the graphic design and the marketing and the thoughtful design that we produce for our events. And we create this experience for our clients and fundraising. Mm-hmm. So we basically raise dollars through sponsorships pre-event and then design a really great on-site fundraising services through the auction for our events. And that's really our niche is experience providing great content that increases the level of the event that raises the dollars for our nonprofit. So fast forward to 2020, now 2021, we plan special events for corporate, mostly nonprofits, and then we target high-end social events and weddings for that particular market.
Right,
so.
Right. And I remember the time when you made that transition from doing, you know, as you mentioned, the weddings, events like that, mm-hmm. to the big nonprofit events with like the A-list type celebrities and with that major fundraising aspect. Mm-hmm. What was that like, that transition? And how do these celebrities come on board? Do you go out of your way to recruit them? Or is it that, you know, the nonprofits come with them and they're like, look, we have this celebrity on board. Can you plan this event? So like, I'm just wondering how that works.
Sure. So we're very thoughtful about our process. And early on in my career, I always wondered, you know, how we could raise the bar with our nonprofit clients and how we can raise more dollars for them and why one nonprofit versus another was ending up in press. So I always sold to my clients, bringing on a celebrity or bringing on that celebrity factor would increase dollars for their event. Or if they had an annual event that had a celebrity, I didn't think the celebrity that they were bringing on was best suited for their event. So we basically brought on celebrities where it was a strong carrot to dangle that would lure better sponsors, increase sponsorships, better attendees. And when you get all of those people into a room with the high energy of that great celebrity of that time, you know, it had to be a celebrity that wasn't in the area for a while or that was hot at the moment or was a rising star and, you know, just a must-see celebrity.
Yes.
That really makes it when it comes to fundraisers. So I always wanted to attract those celebrities so we can increase dollars for our nonprofits and press and the exposure, et cetera, et cetera. And it always works. Mm-hmm.
No, that's interesting. And is it easy to get them on board?
No.
I figured, does it have to like align with a cause they're interested in, you know, to kind of entice them?
So I have a story about that. So we had a relationship with a Rhode Island agent that had access to celebrities or thought anyway. Mm-hmm. And we booked Natalie Cole through him for one of our nonprofits, a health organization. I thought we had booked, we put the deposit down in September. The event was in March of the next year. And, you know, time went on. I received a call from this gentleman saying, Natalie had canceled. And I'm like, canceled? Ooh. And they're like, well, and then I found out that he held on to he held on to the deposit.
Oh no.
Didn't send the deposit to the agency. Mm-hmm. So she basically she had the right to cancel if she wanted to, because, you know, although we had signed a contract and we had made the deposit, he held on to the deposit. So I basically said, I'm never going to let that happen to me ever again. Mm-hmm. So I started booking all of my headliners directly myself. I've never since that day worked with a third party to hire headline entertainment or celebrities. Mm-hmm. And now I have a huge database of celebrities in my pocket. But just to go back to that story, I was freaking out because I'm like, oh my God.
I can't imagine.
This was actually just after Christmas. Mm-hmm. Okay. So months had gone by since my client had given a deposit for this headliner.
Right.
And I'm like, what am I going to do? So I called William Morris Agency, mm-hmm. and I didn't tell my client at the time. I said, I'm not going to tell my client until I have a plan in place to replace that celebrity. So 2 or 3 weeks later went by, and that's how long it took to replace this celebrity.
Wow.
But we found an amazing replacement, mm-hmm. and it was Queen Latifah.
Wow.
And she was just coming back and she had a new album. Mm-hmm. It was like the perfect timing.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, Queen Latifah was a jewel at this time. So I called my client. I said, I have good news and I have bad news. And I'll start with the bad news. We no longer have Natalie Cole, mm-hmm. but we have Queen Latifah.
Right.
And as soon as we launched that Queen Latifah now was our celebrity headliner, we not only sold out right away, our sponsorships were buying tickets or doubling their sponsorships, and we sold out 3 weeks later. It was insane.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was awesome. And she was so, so great to work with.
That's what I was just about to ask you. Cause like, that's the next question that comes in my head. It's just like, well, what she like to work with? What is it like to work with these celebrities and how amenable are they to like things like this, you know, that come up out of the blue, but then, as you mentioned, presents an opportunity because, like, you know, she had this new album coming out and everything. I just wanted to know what it's like working with them and how that process unfolds.
You know, sometimes it's different. It depends on the celebrity. And, you know, some people just like to go get in and get out and do their job. And some of them are very hard to work with. And then there are celebrities like Queen Latifah and Michael McDonald, mm-hmm. and Anthony Anderson and Common, mm-hmm. that just want to be a part and immerse themselves into the entire event and the crowd. Anthony Anderson in particular, mm-hmm. we brought him to Nantucket last year. And it was so funny. He loves being like in crowds and meeting people.
Yes.
And he's just so amazing. And, you know, we wanted to basically take him out to this fancy restaurant and like wine and dine him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I want to go straight to the,
right,
you know, where the locals are. We had dinner at the Pearl and,
yeah.
and we bumped into Bill Belichick and, you know, had mm-hmm. a great time with them. But after he's like, take me to the club. Like, I want to see where all the locals are.
Right.
So he's just so personable. Queen Latifah was the same way. I mean, Michael McDonald, the same. You know, when you meet personalities and celebrities like that,
mm-hmm.
it makes the nonprofit shine even more because the attendees get more one-on-one time with them.
Yes.
You know, they don't want to just come on stage and get right off and they're gone.
Right.
You know, want to hobnob and meet real people.
Yeah, no, for sure. And especially if it's an extension of who they are as a brand, then it resonates more because if that's that personable brand that they have, then definitely, I can definitely see that. And so I'm wondering how the transition has been for you with COVID and what you've seen in the industry. And I know events have gone more online, they're virtual now, and lots of events mm-hmm. on Zoom. And people are wondering how to take advantage of that and how to build a really nice event virtually. And I know you know, you've mentioned that you've had quite a bit of success in doing that with COVID-19 and even doing live events online. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Sure, sure. So when March rolled around last year, I was freaking out. I'm like, what am I going to do?
Right.
You know, but we communicated with our clients and our sponsors, donors, and we kept that line of communication open,
mm-hmm.
which I think was the reason why we were successful last year. We kept basically you know, for our social clients, it wasn't like last year was not a great year. We had cancellations and we had postponements into this year. Some of them are still even hanging on to 22 because they want to take advantage of a full capacity event. Mm-hmm. But for our nonprofits, we had one canceled event and all of our clients basically for nonprofits stayed on and we received a lot more new clients. We nailed it with our nonprofit clients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in March and April and May, there were a lot of virtual events. And I watched a lot with my team. We watched a lot of the virtual events. And I knew at that time, I didn't want my virtual event to be like that because mm-hmm. fundraisers are all about engagement and experience. So if there's no engagement and people know that they're watching a recorded show, you're not going to raise that much money. I wanted the virtual events to be as real and as engaging as an in-person event as possible. So the really only event that we had that was fully live without any virtual components was on August 31st, and that was a golf tournament. All of the other events that we planned, and that was also a new client, but all the other clients and events that we worked on, actually, there was another one too, the Dreamland Gala, Dream Believers Gala was a drive-in movie gala. So mm-hmm. we were hired in July to basically run the program and the fundraiser for that event. And we raised more dollars during their event for on-site fundraising. So that one was a huge success. But for okay. all of the other events that couldn't have that outdoor live experience, mm-hmm. we produced a live virtual event, which was a hybrid event, essentially, where we had a small intimate event with people in the studio, and we broadcast and live stream the event to the audience virtually.
Right.
And everything was live. Mm-hmm. This was not a fully pre-recorded event. You know, we had a studio, a stage, backdrops, everything was socially distanced. Basically, if you were to think of it, a live event, we had a separate studio with three or four, you know, 72-inch round tables with six seats at the table. And so everyone was like socially distanced. They received meal boxes and that was basically the in-person event. And the in-person event was really the board and any speakers or honorees mm-hmm. and basically the MC and the auctioneer.
Right.
That was basically who attended the event.
Right.
And then we basically had a live auction. We had live auction packages. We sold those live and we figured out a way to do that with great platforms. And the auctioneer was live. And the funny thing, you know, our first event, he's like, I can't believe you're doing this. And I'm like, mm-hmm. me either.
Yeah, because the audience is there on like what, Zoom or another platform. And they're actually the ones bidding on items?
Yeah. So our first event was, I can't tell you, I was nervous as hell. I mean, our audiovisual company, they did not have this in place. So the first time we were doing it, it was the first time the auction platform was doing it. It was the first time the auctioneer was doing it. It was the first time, you know, me as the event producer produced an event like this. So it was a first of first for that night. And I don't know any other company, definitely not in the area, that had done this. And we even had for one of our events, we had an auctioneer, one of the top auctioneers from New York come down to plan our event, to be the auctioneer for our event. And he said, AJ, no one in New York is doing this. And I'm like, yes. Because to me, that was exciting that we were doing something that was, you know, we were kind of like influencing the, the nonprofit event market. So, but for the person who's on stage, they're looking at these large 80-inch monitors. There's a teleprompter. There's an 80-inch monitor under the teleprompter. I'm trying to set the scene. Here's to visually understand what that speaker would look at. And then to the right and the left were other monitors. And to the left, there were two monitors stacked on top of each other. One was the chat on the bottom, the chat feature for all the Zoom attendees. So the MC or the auctioneer could see what people were typing and they were, you know, because they were engaging with the audience.
Right. Yeah.
And then the top monitor was what people were actually bidding. So you could see the bidding war, you know, basically online.
Yeah.
And it was live. And we basically had the right bandwidth for internet. And we basically had the right people in place to make sure it was as real life as possible. And just like in the room, if you were in a ballroom, the only thing that would delay is if really someone was actually debating, okay, am I really going to go up to $1,000? Am I going to go to the next
right.
level? So that was really essentially the only delay we had. And for every event that we did, we reached our target. For some events, we exceeded our fundraising goals. And it was just like, sometimes we were just like jumping up and down
mm-hmm.
because the night was so successful.
That's amazing though. And like, as you're speaking, I'm thinking about like, so there's the auction, which is an amazing component of this live event that can be done virtually. Has there been anything else in terms of your live events too that you've been able to incorporate?
I mean, I would say that for this year, you know, for our wedding clients and social clients, I do think that we are going to be incorporating the virtual or live streaming component to our weddings. So, you know, if we're doing a social or a wedding event before, I would say, August of this year, we will still plan an intimate, high-end, luxurious wedding or milestone event and incorporate the Zoom factor and the elements into the design elements of the event. Where people can, you know, participate in the Zoom chat feature, and then we can live stream some people to do a toast or to engage directly with the bride and groom or the person that's, you know, the person that's celebrating their 50th anniversary. So I think that will be a component that will last for years.
Yeah.
With social and nonprofit events. What we found with our nonprofit events, it was really great for exposure. What I forgot to mention is that the other reason why our nonprofit events were so high energy, we sent these custom party in the boxes, which were filled with like these, for one of our events, School of the World, the party in the boxes included these beautiful, colorful masks from Central America,
wow.
Guatemala. And we added like these great maracas, and they were delivered with a 3-course meal. Wine, and they were able to, we had streamers so we could visually see them getting excited rather than clapping, you know, we
right.
the streamers. So we incorporated those for a lot of our events. So it made them feel there like they were in part of the process and in
mm-hmm. room.
And that also in elevated the experience and the engagement for our attendees. So that's also really important.
Yeah, no, this is very interesting because I had no idea, and I'm sure lots of people listening in had no idea that, you know, these are the ways that we could incorporate, you know, these various activities into our virtual events to make them so successful. So that's very interesting. And so I'm wondering from like a business aspect for people listening in, who are interested in getting into, you know, event planning, and especially to the level that you're at, like, are there any lessons or any advice that, you know, you would have for people wanting to break into the field?
Sure. So I would say the first and foremost advice that I would give to anyone wanting to break into the industry is get some experience, because you can't know that you are going to be good at as an event planner or producer until you're in the field experiencing the event. That's what I would do. I would ask if you could be a volunteer or event staff for any event planning companies and gain that experience. And also, there are a lot of colleges that have certificate programs for event planning. Do that if you can. But gaining the experience on site, setting up decor,
mm-hmm.
you'll know if this is something you really want to do. Because, you know, we've had people that we've hired or interns or people that have come in as apprentice, and they're really good in the office, but they're not great on site. Mm-hmm. So there's a certain, there's a certain personality that can do both. And you should really be that personality that can do both, not just one or the other, if you want to be an event planner. So that's the advice that I would give.
Yeah, no, that's very good advice. Cause like, as you were speaking, I was thinking about the production aspect, which you got, really good experience from, as you mentioned at the beginning, from the Miss Universe pageant or the Miss USA pageant, which, as you mentioned, just very, very hands-on. And it's not necessarily that event is glamorous, obviously, but you know, it's not necessarily the type of glamorous event that you're seeing all the time. Like it's very hands-on is what I'm guessing, just thinking about what it would be like.
And it's very service oriented and you have to cater to people. And, you know, it seems like there are a lot of mundane responsibilities with this job, but it's the details that make the event happen. Like my company is nothing without every single support staff that we have. I'm nothing without my volunteers, my event staff, no matter how senior or low level they may be. Every single person is an asset to the event.
Yeah, because some of these nonprofit events are huge, like some 500 people. I mean, you know better than me, but I'm thinking like some of these events are you know, nothing like a wedding in terms of the size and the magnitude of the...
Oh, yeah. Like, we'll have 20 to 30 for our typical nonprofit. We have 20 to 30 volunteers in addition to our event staff. And then for some events that we've produced in the past, it's like up to 300 volunteers, you know, because we produce events for up to 80,000 people or huge conventions that span over a week long. And, but, you know, regardless of the event, I love events. I have a huge passion for it. I love day of event. The week of the event is my favorite or the morning of an event is my favorite because it's the execution and it's the response that guests receive that make it so worthwhile. And you know, we call the hard work so worthwhile. And that's the part that I cannot wait to experience. That's what makes it really exciting for me. But, you know, just as I am excited about my events, I have to tell you, Keisha, that I am so excited for your success too.
Yeah, thank you. Like that means a lot. Like, you know that. I mean, you know, you were there when Garfield died and, you know, you were there for me and you saw how devastated I was. And, you know, that was years ago still, but you know, like it was just something so monumental. And so having the book, you know, come out and have it resonate with people and people contact me and tell me how much it has touched my life, you know, touched their lives, has been so special to me. And so, yeah, thank you. Like that, it's like coming full circle. So yeah, it's a really good feeling. And you were in the book. I mentioned you there and I was just glad, you know, to have something that contained all these people special to me in it too, you know? So I have this kind of very precious thing that also holds the lives of everyone precious to me in it.
So you're precious to me too.
Thank you.
And I have to tell you, because of you, I am writing a book.
Yeah, we're going to have you back once the book is out.
Yes, absolutely. I would love that.
So just to wrap up, can you tell everybody just where to find you on social media and your website?
Sure. So my website is ajwevents.com. And through social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, it's ajwevents. That's my handle for all. And you can also find me on LinkedIn as well.
Okay, perfect. So that's great. Thanks again, AJ, for being here. This was very special for me.
Special for me too.
Thank you for joining us this week on Holistic Wealth with Keisha Blair. Make sure to visit our website, keishablair.com, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS so you will never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes, or if you simply tell a friend about the show. that would help us out too. Are you a member of the Institute on Holistic Wealth? If not, what are you waiting for? Go to InstituteOnHolisticWealth/memberships to choose your membership plan and join. As a member, you get so many perks. Free worksheets, advice, coaching, and a member's workshop to design an intentionally designed life. You need to figure out your life purpose? Take the Build Your Life Purpose Portfolio online self-paced course. You're struggling with all your money decisions? Take the free financial identities quiz and then take the course. You recently had a breakup, job loss, or experienced the death of a loved one? Take the holistic healing course. You need an overall plan to achieve holistic wealth? We will help you figure out your holistic wealth blueprint. And of course, if you want to start making money by helping others achieve holistic wealth, become a certified holistic wealth consultant. Regardless of what career you've got, the Institute will show you how to increase your income and walk in your purpose. The sooner you join, the sooner you start to achieve a more holistically wealthy lifestyle. And you're going to want to stay for a very long time. So go to InstituteOnHolisticWealth/memberships to join. If you haven't read the book yet, pick up a copy of the award-winning best-selling Holistic Wealth, 32 Life Lessons to Help You Find Purpose, Prosperity, and Happiness.